after I graduated from college, well, I was one of those kind that went in one door and they kicked me out the other. But I had one experience while I was in college, though, I'd like to share with you after hearing somebody in their testimony talk about accents. Now, I'm the only one here that doesn't have an accent, but after hearing her talk about accents, I just have to share this with you because it was one of the most something or other experiences I ever had. I was 17 when I went to this school and was trying to finish up high school because I thought I was going to get drafted. So I went to a summer school there and thought I was going to get drafted in, oh, I can't remember what, Boer War. It was way back, one of those wars way back anyway. And some of the guys got together and we thought we'd have a gospel team. And so some of them sang a lot better than I did. And so they were the singers and there wasn't, They finally elected me to be the preacher, and we didn't have any place to go as far as invitations was concerned, so we kept practicing and getting ready, you know, and one of the guys on our team was from the deep south, and he really was thick, you know, just could hardly understand him, foreign language almost, and so we ran around the dorm imitating him, mimicking him all the time. Well, the first invitation we got was to a little Negro Baptist church over on the other side of the tracks there in the college town that we were in. And we were real happy for an invitation. We went down there, and they were wonderful folks, and they were real happy in the Lord, and the guys sang, and finally came time for me to preach, and I got up, and I was scared spitless. I hadn't had much of an opportunity to do anything like that, but I thought, well, I better start opening my mouth for the Lord. And so I wound up and I got going, and I thought it must be going fairly well. At least words were coming out. And the guys were sitting in the chairs, and they go like this, you know, the rest of the team members. And just making monkeys out of themselves quietly, you know, so nobody else would see them and trying to get me. I couldn't figure out what they wanted. And one time I just stopped and I leaned down. So I just went ahead and gave the whole message. We got back to the dorm and they said, "Do you know what you did?" I said, "No, what?" They said, "You preached that whole message in the thickest southern drawl we ever heard." And we were scared to death you'd break in the middle and change, and the people would think you were making fun of them. And boy, I tell you, that I really got a lesson taught me about imitating other people that night, getting in the habit of it. You know, in the minutes that we have together tonight, I'd like to take a little time to share with you something that really has opened up a lot of insight to my own heart. Your neat singers here a little while ago, they ought to make a record of their song. Some of the records I've heard over the radio, they ought to be able to sell 5 million. one of the songs they were singing from the 19th Psalm really rang a bell with me because it was the first psalm that I memorized when I was a boy. I lived with my grandmother and she had me memorize psalms. I learned a number of psalms and other chapters of the Bible at that time. But that was the first one. And, you know, I used to, and maybe you go out like this. I happened to live in a place where there were lakes and mountains and it was a real beautiful area. And I used to go out and sit on a log or something and just look at it all, and it popped into my mind. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth His handiwork. You sure see that around here. And as I began to learn these things from the Scriptures, and I began to see that the law of the Lord was perfect, it was pure, it was right, and it could, if I'd go to it and find out about the Lord and find out about His ways, why, He just smoothed out my life as far as what was going on inside of me was concerned. No promise in the Bible, absolute to the Christian, that He'll smooth out your life on the outside. In fact, He promises trials, tribulations, tests, difficulties, persecutions. Oh, there's a wonderful bunch of goodies that God promises the Christian in the Bible. Goodies in the sense of what they'll do for the life of the one who recognizes that God has our best interests at heart. And so everything He allows in this sin-cursed world to come into our life, He perfectly measures it out and has a purpose in it. And that is that we might end up, when we've let Him do His work in our life, with a character like Jesus Christ. This is His objective. This is what every single thing in the life of a child of God is measured out for. And it's measured out perfectly. It's kind of hard for us sometimes to keep the perspective, isn't it? It's rough sometimes when life begins to really throw things at you, to keep the perspective in this and to really see God backstage working out every single detail right down to the smallest degree in order that He might form the character of Christ in our life. Because His ultimate desire for us is the same desire He had for His only begotten Son, Jesus Christ. And Philippians chapter 2 shows us what God had planned for His Son and what it took, the path it took for Him to achieve that. I'm sure you're familiar with those verses, but in Philippians 2, we find it says this, "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made Himself of no reputation, and took upon Him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men. And being found in fashion as a man, He humbled Himself, and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. Wherefore God also hath highly exalted Him, and given Him a name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow, things in heaven and things in earth and things under the earth, and every tongue should confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father." God's ambition, God's desire for you and for me here tonight is that, having learned obedience, having learned what really counts in life and the things that will last forever, rather than just picking up the things that last for a moment, give pleasure for a moment, and then burst like bubbles in our hands, He might then one day lift you up, no longer as the Bible calls us, pilgrims, strangers, the offscouring of the earth, those who, if they live like their Lord lived, will probably get what their Lord did. And you'll remember it tells us that they spit on Him and they cursed Him and they reproached Him and they ultimately took Him and nailed Him to a cross. But oh, listen tonight, God's ultimate purpose for you is first to make you like His Son and then seat you with Him throughout eternity, where you will rule and reign with Christ in perfect righteousness, forever and forever and forever. How big is your understanding of the destiny God has for you? It'll have tremendously to do with what you do with the things that come into your life now. And I'd like to take you to the Old Testament tonight and over, oh, we'll start over in the book of Genesis, chapter 37. I'd like to look at an individual in the Old Testament, somebody I'm sure that many of you have read about or studied about, heard about before, but who God has seen fit to put in the Bible to perfectly show us in a human being, just a plain, ordinary human being, what He can do to make a person like Christ. Now, I don't know whether you want to take the 6 character tests that Joseph, that we're going to look at, took or not. Maybe you say, boy, if taking these tests will produce in me a character like Jesus Christ to the glory of God, and so that I might forever be able to just live out my life to the fullest possible of all the potential God created for me, then throw them at me. But let's look at the six character tests that Joseph underwent in these last chapters of the book of Genesis and see. I don't know how many are going to want to get on Joseph's wagon or tonight, and how many may feel. Because sadly, and I fear, I hope not, but I fear seated in this room tonight, there may be those, there are probably those, who want all the gravy, but are not willing to pass the character test. The first one we find, as we look at this account of this man Joseph, here in the 37th chapter of Genesis, really it introduces to it in the third verse of the 37th chapter, and it says, "Now Israel," and his name also was Jacob, that was his name by birth, "loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that his father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him." And as you turn over in the account, you find beginning with the 13th verse that it says, now we'll start with the 12th, "And his brethren," that's Joseph's brethren, "went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said unto Joseph, Do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, Here am I. And he said to him, Go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem." The account goes on to say that he had to really search them out because they'd moved from there, and so he kept going, diligently seeking them. But in verse 18, we get a little insight into this fellow's family, into his brothers. For it says, "And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him." And here's the first big test that Joseph was given. And he was given this test at about 17 years of age. My guess is that hits pretty close, give or take a year, to an awful lot of you in this room here tonight. Did you catch what the test was? Did you catch the test, that the first test that God really gave Joseph as he began to blossom into the years when he would be independent of his parental guidance and have to go out into life and begin making his own decisions and choosing the path that he was going to walk in? The first test that God gave him was to see whether or not he would be obedient in spite of unreasonable circumstances. Did you get the picture as we read? You know, a lot of times I think we read the Bible, they go, "Oh, that's a nice story. It must be a nice story. It's in the Bible, you know," and we just read along and we don't really get a hold of what's there. But if you look at that account, you'll see a picture emerge. Here's a man, he has 10 sons. And then along comes an 11th. And boy, this boy was, in those days, they sometimes had more than one wife. And this man's first wife, the bride of his first love, and his desire was to have a son by her, and he never had one. And then finally one day she had this boy. And they named him Joseph. And as he began to grow up before the eyes of the rest of those brothers, his father did a number of very foolish things. He singled the boy out as his favorite son. Now, I know in the Bible that this is a beautiful picture of the way God sent his son into the world, and God showed that he favored his son as contrasted with all the sinful, wicked, fallen human race, and how it turned men, even nation of Israel, the Lord's own national people, against him. That's true. But just in these human character tests tonight, if you see this picture, Here's a father who very unreasonably singles out this one boy. And he makes him a coat of many colors, it says. And just over and over again, I'm confident there were graphic things that showed that here was the favorite. Here was the one that the father was really going to lavish his love and care and attention on. And of course, what generated in the hearts of all his brothers? They all turned against him. They all hated him. They all began to figure and connive and scheme ways to get back at this kid, this upstart that comes along in the family and takes the affections of the fathers. And then, naive dad that he was, one day when the boy was about 17, he'd sent all the rest of the sons, probably by this time, well, I think by this time another brother, yes, he'd come along by now, the 12th in this family, Benjamin. The rest of the brothers were out taking care of the father's sheep. And you know, the request that Joseph's father made of him there would be, if you get the background, just about the same as requesting you, say you belong to the commandos or something, and a real wild, woolly, tear them up and stomp the daylights out of them gang in the slums of a big city, in a difficult, and you where. You were sent in the middle of the night down through the darkest streets when there was a gang war going on between you and the rebels, with no weapons to try and make peace with them. Now, I don't know if you've heard anything about gang wars, but anyway, here's old Joseph. And he had unreasonable circumstances. He had a difficult lot. And what happens when his father says to him, I want you to go down and take a message to your brothers? Well, Dad, you know, we got lots of servants. Why don't you send them? Well, you know, not a word of it. Here am I. What do you want me to do? And then when an obstacle came, boy, where you and I would grease out of it for sure. I'm sure we would. Thinking of Dad, doesn't he know the way that my brothers feel about me? Doesn't he know what the situation is? And still sending him. He gets this obstacle, he goes down, and they're not where he was told to find them. Boy, I think I'd take off for home then and say, Dad, they've scattered, can't find them. No, he searches them out, and he takes the message to them. And when they see him a long ways off, they conspire to kill him. But what I hope you get out of this, because you're going to find this a key to your future. You know, there's a command in the Bible to those who are still responsible at home. This isn't talked about much anymore. And we're in the age of where it's popular to be rebellious. If you're rebellious, you're with the crowd. If you're against authority, if you're against that which draws the line, whether it's the governmental authorities over us, or whether it's authority in the home, you're in the popular crowd today, but you're not in God's crowd. Do you know that the only commandment consistently given throughout the Bible to those who are still accountable in their home, those who are still drawing economically and for much of their care and direction in the home, what the Bible says? Obey. Cheerfully in the Lord, obey. Let me tell you something. If you get up in a conference like this and you talk about the Lordship of Jesus Christ, the same one who said, follow me, said, obey your parents. Now, I probably ought to leave right here. Because the things that I'm going to bring before you out of Joseph's life are things today that are being thrown out the window on every hand. And we're finding a spirit of independence and anarchy touching our everyday lives that will eat right to the core of any relationship we can possibly have with God. Oh, listen. Joseph knew that in spite of the fact that he had a doting old father that didn't even know how to keep from getting him singled out and hated by his brothers, that he was accountable to God to carry out his father's requests. And he did it without a word. The second character test that Joseph faced. I know when I brought up this first one, it raises lots of questions. Because there can't be a group this big without there being many of you faced with most difficult home situations. And without many of you feeling that the requests that are made of you in your home are not reasonable, you will find it a supreme test of Christian character. Turn in the next chapter, we find the second test. Well, actually, we have to turn over to the 39th chapter, because the 38th is a parenthesis of the life of one of his brothers. I think that parenthesis is put in there to show what rascals they were. But where did Joseph's obedience get him? You remember the account? We don't have time to read it. But they sold him into slavery. That's where it got him. They were going to kill him, and then they found out they could get a little money out of him, and so they sold him instead. And that's where his act of obedience to his father got him. And the next scene comes as those who bought him and took him down into Egypt in slavery sold him to a man by the name of Potiphar in chapter 39. And we find him here in chapter 39 in the household of this man Potiphar. In verse 2 it says, "And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian." Now he's about 17 at this time. We're talking about a teenager close to your own age. A slave now. Favorite son? Zoom right straight down to a slave. Remind you of Philippians chapter 2? Okay, let's see how he did as a slave. "And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand." Verse 6, "And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught that he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored." And this second supreme character test that we find in the life of Joseph, I think can best be stated in just a phrase. Faithfulness after being mistreated and misrepresented. After being mistreated. Joseph, after obedience to his father, was mistreated by his brethren, sold into slavery. As far as he could see, lost every opportunity to inherit all that was coming to him as the favorite son of his father, and now is just a slave in an Egyptian's household. What would you do if something like that happened to you? A good way to answer that question is, what do you do when something unreasonable is asked of you from those that are over you? Whether it's a teacher, a parent, an officer of the law you think is unreasonable, anyone who's over you, how do you react? There's usually a couple of characteristic reactions in situations like this where you think you've been mistreated when you did the right thing. Bitterness sets in. And that bitterness leads to one of two roads, normally. Blah, I don't care. There's no use. You do what's right, nobody appreciates it, so what's the use? And so you just start sliding down the slimy stream of just giving in to life circumstances as they come along. Because nobody appreciated me. Sort of a go out in the garden and eat worms kind of attitude, you know? Big, fat, juicy ones, long, green, slimy ones. Nobody cares for me. Nobody loves me. Or you get a hold of, you know, your bootstraps, as the expression goes, and you say, "All right, if nobody else appreciates me, if those rascals of brothers of mine sell me into slavery, if my father hasn't got enough sense to know when I'm a dead duck, to fill his orders, then I'll make a way of my own. And write off the past, and write off the people in the past, and boy, get out there and get a hold of life and make it go. This is a pretty typical reaction. But what do we find about Joseph? Not with him, it wasn't. We find that Joseph, right straight through, without skipping a beat, was faithful in spite of being mistreated. And he just became a first-class slave. First he was a first-class son. Then he became a first-class slave. Quite a step down. Well, where did this get him? You'd think surely with passing two tests, God would let up, huh? Oh, God knows what's in us, and he knows what needs to be tested in our lives. Listen, guys and gals here tonight. God is so desirous of you realizing the full potential for which you were created. And as he looks down into my life and down into your lives and sees the twisted mess that sin has made out of our lives, he says, I'm going to change that person. If they'll let me. If they won't let me, they'll have to go on into eternity and live forever in their awful, fallen, twisted condition, and they'll never realize the potential for which I created them. But if they'll lend themselves to me, if they'll yield themselves to me, then I'll save that life, and then I'll change that life and make them, give them a character like my son. So he had to keep working on Joseph because there was another area to be tested. We see it right in this same chapter. For up to Joseph one day, there in Potiphar's house, when he was complete boss of everything, we'll make a guess, maybe he was 20, 22 by now, several years a slave. Verse 7, comes Potiphar's wife. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, Lie with me. And he refused and said unto his master's wife, Behold, my master wroughteth not what is knoweth not what is with me in all the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept anything back from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And here Joseph underwent the third great character test, and you've undergone it in the past, doubtless. Not exactly in the same way Joseph did, but this test comes in life. And if you haven't sensed it yet, you soon will. And that is the test of faithfulness to God in self-control when it looks like there'll be no consequences for giving in to sin. It's faithfulness to God in self-control and control of the self-life. Now, whether Joseph would have had just human, fleshly, passionate desires to fulfill in giving in to this request, or whether his only desire would be to protect self, knowing the vindictive wrath of a woman like Potiphar's wife if she was crossed by a slave. Whichever he was trying, he would have been trying to protect by giving in to her. Look what Joseph said. Right straight from the shoulders. Are you able to do this when temptation is put before you and people want to know the reason why you won't give in to it? You say, well, you know, I just don't feel like it. I'm tired tonight. I worked hard all day, you know, and I just got to slack off tonight. Huh? When the kids come along and say, how about it? Let's go. You give just sort of a non-negotiable, weak, wishy-washy, sort of a slither-out kind of a response. Or, in order to protect what you think is your reputation with them, or in order to keep them off your back and try and get in good with them, do you go along with the sin that they want you to? Oh, I love to listen to Joseph's response here. It's fantastic. It's straight from the shoulder. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? A great test that he faced here was faithfulness in self-control when only God can see and know. How you doing? Is this your desire for that kind of a life before God? The fourth test that Joseph was put to, we'll wind all these tests up very shortly, but I trust that each one of them will be helpful to different ones here. We find over in the 40th chapter, the result of what happened there with Potiphar's wife is that she went and told Potiphar when he came home that Joseph was a rascal, and Potiphar believed her and threw him into jail. So here he goes, favorite son, slave, jailbird. We don't have time to talk about his time in jail, but if you'll read that account in the 39th chapter, you'll find out that he soon became the chief jailbird. No bitterness, passing these tests, everything that seemed to be against him thrown at him, right down now in the dungeon, in the bottom of everything, and in a short time, he had the run of the whole place. And everything that was done in that jail, it says, was done by Joseph. And the jailkeeper had no worry or concern at all. Talk about a kind of life that was pinned to an absolute. Joseph had a secret. He had a secret that could take him through anything that was thrown at him and give him poise and the ability to come out on top in each circumstance. The fourth test there in the 40th chapter, there was a butler and a baker thrown into jail at the same time as Joseph or thereabouts. And they had dreams. And Joseph was given by God the ability to interpret their dreams. And it came out that the baker was going to be hanged and the butler sent back to Pharaoh's palace. So, in verse 14 of chapter 40, Joseph asks a favor of the butler. And think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. Joseph wasn't interested in being a jailbird. It's not that he didn't have desires. He says, look, buddy, when you get back to Pharaoh, find some way to get me out of this place. Now, he was faithful in the place, but he was human, too, and he didn't prefer the place. He says, help me get out. Verse 23, now the butler gets to go back, but look what happens. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. Now it takes a while to see how Joseph responded to the forgetfulness of the butler. But I just want to say here that one of the supreme character tests through which you'll pass, if you claim to want God to refine you and make you like His Son, Jesus Christ, is the test that comes when you have befriended others and they forget you or turn against you. Had that happened yet? What has it done to you? This is a test God will let you go through if you desire to be made like His Son. You're bound to pass through it in one way or another in your life. The fifth test. He was forgotten. He stayed down in the jail. And as we see the whole account, it was now getting close to his 30th year. 13 years of this. How long can you take pressure? Huh? How long can you take pressure? You know, when the old thumb screw keeps coming down, huh? We're going to see the key to this in just a moment. That fifth test came when Joseph was taken up out of prison. The butler remembered him finally when Pharaoh had a dream. He came out of the prison, he went into before Pharaoh, and he interpreted Pharaoh's dream. But you know, a tremendous thing shows out in the account where he interpreted Pharaoh's dream. In chapter 41, verse 15, we find it says this, "And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace." You go on in this chapter in verse 25, and Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. Verse 28, the middle, what God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. Verse 32, at the end, the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. Characteristic of Joseph, the test that he passed, was absolute faithfulness to give God the credit for any gifts or talents or abilities that he possessed, rather than taking glory to himself. Boy, couldn't you just see some cocky kind of a guy who felt that, boy, I've got the ability to interpret dreams, you know, and take the credit and the glory as he interpreted Pharaoh's dream. You see it all around you every day. Maybe God gives a guy a halfway decent body and he acts as if he built himself. Walks around like a peacock, you know. I'm not an example, but you see a girl with perhaps some natural beauty, and man alive, you'd think she designed the whole thing herself. And had fallen madly in love with the design. Somebody's got a little bit of a voice, and boy, they've got to hear it after they sing. Someone has some ability to communicate to others, some gift, some talent from God. And the least little opportunity, just like pumping up an old balloon. But Joseph passed this test, a supreme test. He gave God the glory. And the result was, did you catch it? Would you catch it in verse 38? Was because he gave God the glory, the unbelieving heathen amongst whom he was recognized that the Lord was with him. And you'll find this true when you give God the glory for any work that he does through you. The unsaved, the kids you go to school with, your parents, the people around you will see the Lord rather than you. For what did Pharaoh say in verse 38 of chapter 41? And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this is a man in whom the Spirit of God is? You want that said of you? Then learn by God's grace to recognize that every good and perfect gift comes down from God. He's put it in your life. And you're not a source, you're just a channel. And the moment your life changes from your thinking you're a source to your just being a channel, in that moment, there'll be the difference between people seeing you and Christ through your life. The last test. Over in chapter 45, it's, I believe, the supreme test. It seems to be the kind of a one that roadblocks more than any other. Ah, the stage is set now. There was a famine over in Joseph's land where his brothers and father were. They came in order to get food. Joseph has been made by Pharaoh the second in all the kingdom, exalted to this position. Because the Lord was with him. He saved up the food during the years of famine. The brothers come. He recognizes them. But the first time they come, he doesn't reveal himself to them, but just discovers some things about them. But Joseph's desire all along, and I don't have time to go into the details, but it was to see if God had yet been able to get through to his brother's heart and change them. So the second time they come back, he insists they bring their younger brother Benjamin. And they come, and finally he reveals himself to them. Get the picture now. Here's Joseph, top dog in Egypt. He can do what he pleases. And he's got those 10 brothers right there in his hands, huh? Well, think about Potiphar and his wife. You'd think there'd be some account of how he... them. Think about the fellow who forgot him, the butler, right down the line. But look at what Joseph's reaction is. Chapter 45, verse 3. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. I don't blame them. Do you? Verse 4. And Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. Can't you just see it? Come on over here. I can see them trembling. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves. For ye sold me hither, that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. The sixth great test, and it ended up revealing the secret of Joseph's life, was that he had grace from God to forgive those who had mistreated him and wrongfully used him. And it resulted in their salvation. That's what we get from Christ, isn't it? He came unto his own, and his own received him not. They crucified him. They rejected him. Although his life was a perfect example before them. And here we see Joseph. His father comes. He receives him with open arms. No bitterness. His brothers come. He forgives them without a bit of reservation. And any others, evidently, who might have entered into his life. And his key, his secret was that he knew God was in control of his life all the time. Oh, listen. If you are professing tonight to have turned your life over to Jesus Christ, let it be practical. Don't make it just a sort of a momentary experience, but let the Spirit of God control you. And these six areas will give you some real keys on what He wants to do. Joseph was exalted to the highest place in Egypt next to Pharaoh, just as the Lord Jesus Christ was exalted by God the Father after He was willing to go to death for you and me. And as the Lord is able to show you how, even as you undergo things you can't understand and you think are unreasonable, but as you give God the glory in the midst of them and are faithful, He'll give you the chance to be a testimony for Him. And Christ's character will be formed in your life. Let's just have a word of prayer together.